welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by the OU Israel Center in Jerusalem. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Shabbat Parshat Noach, 5767, today being the fourth day of Cheshvan, 5767, on the secular calendar, October 26th, 06. And let's begin without further ado with Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tehiyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yoh Adonai mi ya'amod, ki imacha haslicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara v'ashivya, ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha-makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'miafela l'ora, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. This Saturday night, this Motzoi Shabbat, we in Israel begin to insert into the daily weekday Amidah the petition for rain with the words V'tein tal umatar livracha. Sfaradim, Edot Mizrach, have a much more elaborate bracha, which they replace the summertime. One is Borech Aleinu and the other is Borechenu. But from the Ashkenazi perspective, we're dealing with the Borech Aleinu blessing in the Amidah. And during the summer months, or the non-rainy season here, running from Pesach through the sixth of Cheshvan, we'll say, we say, v'tein bracha, give a blessing. That's what we ask for God, from God. From the seventh of Cheshvan, the eve of the seventh of Cheshvan until Pesach, we add the words and come out with, v'tein tal umatar livracha, give dew and rain for a blessing. In Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, it is the beginning of December when they begin to ask for rainfall. Maybe I'll touch upon that further down in the show. But since the show originates in Israel, I just want to make it clear to those who are listening outside of Israel that the timing that I'm talking about relates to this coming Motzoi Shabbat. And if I speak of our beginning to say Tal U'Matar, I am not suggesting that people in Chutz La'aretz do that yet. As I said, they wait for the beginning of December. But there are ideas and concepts that I do want to share with you. I gave a shiur yesterday on the 3rd of Cheshvan, which was my grandfather's yahrzeit. 46 years ago he passed away, a little over a half year before my bar mitzvah, so you could figure out how old I am. If you didn't know, I'll give you another hint. I am 3 days older than the state of Israel. 3 days. In any event, my grandfather's name was Mordechai, son of Pinchas. I am named for my great-grandfather. And as I said in the Shi'ur, I was dedicating the Divrei Torah, the words of Torah, in his memory. You'll probably hear that again because I'm going to play pieces of that Shi'ur. In fact, I'll do that right now and listen as it's playing so that I can make comments about it that might be appropriate for this radio show. First, I want to say that today's date, the 3rd of Cheshvan, is mentioned in the Mishnah. I don't know
how many dates are actually mentioned in all of Mishnayot. It got my curiosity up because, you know, I don't like to leave it with just today is mentioned, but what else is mentioned. But I'll give you the context. I'm doing this in memory of my grandfather, whose yahrzeit is today. And just as a side point, a grandchild generally takes on the yahrzeit of a grandparent when there are no children, or in the case of a guy with Kaddish, where there's no son to take to say Kaddish. In other words, as long as my father and uncle were both alive, I never said Kaddish on my grandfather's yahrzeit. But after my father and then my uncle passed away, then my brothers and I and my cousins started saying Kaddish on his yahrzeit. I asked the Shaila about that, and I was told that it is not primarily observing the yahrzeit of the grandfather, but it's observing kibbutz va'im for your own parent. In other words, a sign of respect for your parent, which continues after their death, is following through on the yahrzeit of their parents. And it does not go further than that. You don't have to have your great-grandparents' yahrzeit and further back than that. So this is in memory of my grandfather. His name was Max Chernovsky, Mordechai ben Pinchas. His father is the Pinchas that I'm named after. The Mishnah in Tanit says, following a previous Mishnah that had just said, we ask for rainfall close to the time that we need rain, and rain comes. Definition of that is this Mishnah, which is, according to the first opinion, on the third of Cheshvan, we start asking for rain. Asking for rain means to include in the davening the words, V'tein tal umatar livracha. Rabban Gamliel challenges the statement of the first opinion. And he says, nope, not the third, but the seventh. And he gives a reason. The reason is that's 15 days after the holiday, after Simchas Torah, and that will give time for the last straggling pilgrim who came to Jerusalem to return to Nahar Prat. Nahar Prat is a river in former Bavel, and apparently in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, even though Aliyah LeRegel was done from Eretz Yisrael, there were neighboring communities outside of Israel, which had the status of Chutz La'aretz, but were close enough for people to make the trek to come to Yerushalayim. So the Mishnah is discussed by the Gemara and by many commentaries explaining that the idea that you don't want to impose on an individual who is not yet full of heart to ask for rain because he's still on the road. Roads were muddy. Roads were dirt, which means they would become muddy in the rain and make traveling very difficult. And therefore, this guy, this hypothetical returning Olel LeRegel, wouldn't have his whole heart into asking for rain. But follow this. Therefore, we don't ask him to do it. And if we don't ask him to do it, none of us do it. It's an amazing idea if you think about it. In fact, the idea is so amazing that it survived the practical application. We don't have Aliyah LeRegel without a Beit HaMikdash. And Amir Tzashem, in the time of the third Beit HaMikdash, we will have Aliyah LeRegel where the pilgrim who comes could go back by plane or any way he wants much faster than 2 weeks. There is no place on earth that'll take you 2 weeks to get home wherever you come. And roads are paved. It's totally anachronistic. And yet, the halacha remains, because it's a reminder of the fact that built into the halacha that was decided is a concern for each person. It's not, well, sacrifice for the greater good. It's almost the opposite of that. We will all hold off for the good of each individual. And it's a concept which translated into halacha, where today and next year and last year we start saying V'tein tal umatar livracha only on the 7th of Cheshvan. But this produces an interesting halachic picky point. During the summertime, If a person were to make a mistake in his Amidah and say v'tein talu matar livracha, it invalidates the Amidah, and the person has to repeat the whole thing. Full 19 brachot again, because he said v'tein talu matar livracha, which is invoking at that season the opposite of a blessing, and we don't let it stand. The halacha says, invalid, say it again. Today, if a person were to make a mistake, because he heard the Mishnah says from the third of Cheshvan, you say v'tein talu matar livracha, then he dozed off, and he didn't hear that Rabban Gamliel said the seventh, and we paskin like Rabban Gamliel. So he walked away from the shir saying, oh wow, I learned something new. Third of Cheshvan, he says v'tein talu matar livracha. He's wrong, but the halacha says, can't really claim that the Amidah is invalid, because it only becomes invalid because we're talking about invoking the opposite of a blessing. I don't even want to say the word. Therefore, on the one hand, they say maybe the Shmon Esrei should stand, even though he made a mistake. On the other hand, the halacha is 7th of Cheshvan is when we start. So I don't care what the reason is. The 7th of Cheshvan is when you start. If you say Talamatar when we're not saying it, it invalidates the Amidah. On the other hand, the first hand, as Tevye would do, you can't really claim, and we're talking about tossing out 19 brachot that we like declare are wasted brachot because you said v'tein talamata levracha when it's the rainy season already and we need rain. Therefore, the halacha equivocates and says, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to say the Amidah again. That does not mean that opinion wins. Because when you say it again, you're going to have the following mental condition. You say in your head, if this Amidah is required to be repeated, here it is. And why would it be? Because the rule of 7 Cheshvan is the rule. But in case this Amidah is not necessary, because the one that I said is really not invalid, then let this be what's called Tfilat Nidava. Tfilat Nidava means a bonus, voluntary, extra prayer. We don't usually do it, but officially it's on the books because it parallels the Beit HaMikdash, where you had obligatory sacrifices and you had voluntary sacrifices. A nidava means, in modern terms in Hebrew, a donation, meaning something you don't have to give, but you're voluntarily offering it. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, it meant a korban, where you say, you know, I feel like bringing a korban, or something nice happened and I want to bring a korban. Corresponding to the korban nidava, the optional voluntary sacrifice, is tfilat nidava. There are conditions for it, but we don't have to get into that now. But that's how the Shulchan Aruch equivocates and says, we have a quandary here. Do we let the Amidah stand? Well, you said v'tein talamata levracha before you were supposed to, so maybe not. But do we invalidate it? Well, maybe not, because it's already the rainy season. That's how it comes out. A side point of all of this is the significance of something as simple as v'tein talu matar livracha. I always say in different shiurim on this topic that the halacha could have been, all right, so you said it, big deal. Don't say it again. Say it when you're supposed to. You made a mistake. What's the big deal? The answer is, prayer is a big deal. Prayer is supposed to be done properly. It's supposed to be done the right way. What follows from this, which it doesn't say in this context, is that you have to put your heart into prayer. It's not something just to mumble through, because if we're talking about the validity of a prayer because you said or didn't say v'tein talu matar livracha, how much more so should we be talking about the validity of a prayer because you weren't paying attention to what you were saying, or your mind was wandering and you're thinking of something else? That's the unspoken lesson here, the Musar lesson, that Chazal treated prayer very seriously to the point where you have to know these little details in order to be able to do it right.
At this point in the shiur, we went on to a almost 20-minute tangent or series of tangents, which I'm not going to include in the show, What we're going to pick up from, though, was my trying to get across the point of paying attention to the words and the meaning of prayer. And you'll see a few different angles that I took in that respect.
There's a story they tell about the two rabbis, one Chassid and one a Misnagid, who ended up in the same sharing a room in an inn because it was overcrowded on their travels. Both venerable rabbis, and in the morning they davened, and the Misnagid, took a long time, but he was finished with all of his davening, and the Chassidish Rebbe is still there, and he hasn't moved much since he started. So he said, "Are you okay? Do you feel all right? I'm already finished davening. Where are you holding?" He said, "I said the word modeh, and then I was about to say the word ani, but I could not really appreciate who that is and what that means." So he was stuck on trying to say that word. If you think about any of these things, you don't have to exaggerate like the story, but it's there. Do you realize that I've used this example often. You're walking down a corridor in a building, and there's a water fountain. And you say, "Oh, I'm thirsty." And you bend down for a little squish of water. Just that, that's it. A sip. That's all you're going to take. You're on your way someplace else. You make a bracha. The bracha has 9 words, which most people would say, and take your sip. Time that was like a second and a half to 2 seconds. Slow it up and realize the profundity of what you're saying. Baruch means that God, according to one opinion, that God is the source of all blessing. Atah. We address God in second person familiar. We don't do that at the end of the bracha. By the end of the bracha, we're overwhelmed after Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, and we switch to third person. We don't say Shehakol Niya Bidvarecha. That would continue with Atah. You notice every bracha, almost every, there's an interesting asterisk for this, almost every bracha starts out second person familiar, Baruch Atah, and then when we are supposedly struck by the awe of who we're talking to, it's we withdraw and switch to the more respectful third person. Now, I don't know if each of you has your own experiences as children. I grew up in America where you spoke to even great Rabbanim by saying you. But European people always, and yeshiva people would always say, not you said yesterday in Shir that the Gemara was this, it's the Rebbe said. Didn't the Rebbe say? Now, I never got into that. It's very hard to get into that. But it's officially the respectful way of talking. Just like you don't say your majesty, only the close people to the king say that. You address him as his majesty. We do that with God. But we start out Baruch Atah. One of the notable exceptions is Modeh in the morning. Modeh ani lefonecha, melech chai v'kayam, shehechezarta, we stay that way, bi nishmati b'chemla, rabba emunatecha. And one of the commentaries says, you know why we could stay on such a close, intimate term with God? Because you haven't done anything wrong yet. It's like that joke that went around the internet, "Dear God, so far today, I have not spoken any gossip. I have not been mean to anybody. In another minute, I'm going to get out of bed, and then we'll see what the rest of the day has for me." But that's what we say. Modeh is you. We are, if we believe that the soul was refreshed overnight, and you're acknowledging God for restoring your soul, you've got a clean slate. A clean slate allows you to keep second person all the way through. And then Hashem, the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei name. Hashem, Adonai. That, if a person has Kavana, is supposed to have two levels of Kavana. One, the way we say the name, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, which refers to God's master, being master of the universe, creator and master, that's Adon. But it's written with a Yud, a Hey, a Vav, and a Hey. Even if your sitter doesn't have that, it could have two Yuds or a Hey with a Shmichik. It still stands for the Yud, Hey, and Vav, and Hey name. That name refers to God as Hayah, Hoveh, and Yihyeh. Past, present, and future. And those words, Hayah, Hoveh, and Yihyeh, are made up of a Yud, a Hey, and a Vav. Those are the letters that are used in each of those words. So one of the connotations or the implications of that name of God is that God always was, is, and always will be, plus the way we pronounce the name. Now look, remember what we're doing. We're taking a sip of water. We are not benching after a full meal. We're not davening on a Shabbos morning. We're not davening on Yom Kippur. We're taking a quick sip of water, and we're saying nine words. That's it. And I am now already speaking about the third of those words, which is the multiple connotations and multiple intention of that name. And then you get to Elokeinu, which is significant because it's not just Elokim, it's our God. And Melech HaOlam has its own meaning, and I could probably speak a lot about that, which I won't. And then Shahakol Nihya Bidvaro, that everything, you don't address the water. When you say Bori Pri HaGafen, you're talking about the fruit of the vine, meaning the wine that comes from the grapes. When you're talking about Shahakol Nihya Bidvaro, you're not talking about water, or an egg, or chicken, or fish, or meat, or ice cream. You're talking about that everything that exists, every single thing in this universe that exists, came into existence at God's word, Bidvaro. That's an amazing thing, statement to make, of commitment and a restatement of a person's belief for a sip of water. And we do it. But the key is not to spend 10 minutes on it. That's not practical. It'll cost you another second and a half. If you can slow down your Shahakol Nihya Bidvaro from a second and a half to 3 seconds, it'll be there. Because you'll remember this talk.
Yohem Shabbos Sainei Lishkoyach Zichroi Kireyach Anichoyach Yohem Nomot Sovoi Bonoyach Veshom Yonuch Huyegi Koyach Yohem No, Yohem Nomot Sovoi Bonoyach Veshom Yonuch Huyonuchu Yegi Koyach היום נכבוד לי ונאמונים זהים לשומרו יום וזוונים אוהבו בשני לוחוי זוונים רואי בוינים וים יצקויה יוי לא יוי לא מוצו יוי לא מוצו בוי בונויה ושום יונוחו יונוחו יגיעי קויה יגיעי קויה אי לי לה 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 Yoim Shabbosoy nein lishkoyach zikhroy kreyach hanikhoyach Yoim no motzo voy monoyach veshom yonuchu yegiye koyach Yoim no motzo voy monoyach ay 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 veshom yonuchu yegiye koyach ay 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 Yoim no motzo voy monoyach ay 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 veshom yonuchu yegiye koyach ובואו חולום בעבריס יחד נעשה נשמע אומרו כחות ופוסחו ועונו השם אחות ברוך הנויסן ליואב קויה יוי נומות סבוי מונויה איי 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 ושום יונו חגיה קויה איי 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 יוי נומות סבוי מונויה Vishom yom nuchu yigie koyach. Vishom yom nuchu yigie koyach.
You were just listening to two different tunes to the same Shabbat afternoon, or Shabbat morning sometimes, depending on when you eat lunch. Zmirot, Shabbat of the day. Yom Shabbaton Ein Lishkoach. The day of rest should not be forgotten. Zichro Kireach Anichoach. Its memory is like a satisfying aroma. We'll get back to that point in a moment. Yona Motza Voma Noach. On it, the dove found rest. Vishom Yanucho Yigiei Choach. There shall rest exhausted ones. Art Scroll's commentary on the Siddur explains the following. On it the dove found rest. After the waters of the flood had subsided, Noah's dove found rest on the seventh day. In this Zmira, that occurrence is used as an analogy for Israel's love of the Shabbat. Israel, which is frequently likened to a dove, finds its own rest on the seventh day. Towards the end of the year that Noah, family, and animals were on the Teva, the Ark, the waters started to recede. The Ark rested, as the Torah described, on the Ararat Mountains, and then the peaks of the local mountains were visible, after which Noah opened the window in the Teva, and he sent out a raven, which went back and forth over the face of the water. Then he sent out a dove, Vayishalach et hayona me'ito, lirot hakalu hamayim, to see if the waters had receded, al pnei ha'adama, on the face of the earth. Velo matza hayona manoach lechaf ragla. The Torah tells us that at first the dove did not find rest for its foot and came back to the ark because the water was still over the face of the earth. Noach extended his hand and took the dove back in, and another 7 days later he sent out the yona once again. The yona came back with him to him with an olive branch in its beak, and Noach knew that the water had continued to recede. Then 7 days later he sends out the yona again, the lo yasafa shuv elav od. It did not continue to come back to him. The poet of that Zmira for Shabbat borrowed that image and said that on the seventh day the yona finally did find rest, and there is that link in the image of the yona finding rest and the Shabbat day. The additional link, which I mentioned before, I would talk about in a couple of moments, is that after God commands Noah and company to leave the ark, Noah does so, and he builds an altar to God, and he takes from all of the kosher animals and all of the kosher birds, Vaya'al Olot Bamizbeach, and he offers sacrifices on the altar. The Torah tells us, Vayorach Hashem et Reach Hanichoach. God, so to speak, smelled the fragrant aroma of the offerings, and that's when he committed himself, so to speak, not to destroy the world in the way he had done in the generation of the flood. So you have both of those lines in the refrain of Yom Shabbaton Ein Lishkoach, Zichro Kireach Anichoach. It's a memory of that fragrant aroma associated with Shabbat, and the Yona Matzavo Manoach, also associated with Shabbat and with Noach. Hence the choice of the song to open this half of the show. Speaking of Noach, oh, what a clever transition. Speaking of Noach, as you know, we read Parshat Noach this week. And I would like to, I don't know what you want to call it, it's not quite an overview, it's a look, a certain perspective on Bereshit and Noach together, very simple. And it's sort of like this. God created this world, populated it with people, and expected the people to behave in a proper, moral, ethical way as God-fearing people. No big demands above the basic ethical behavior that is expected of and demanded from every human being. 10 generations from Adam until Noach, and God was, again I say so to speak, I use that term so to speak every time I am speaking of God anthropomorphically, because I can't say that God literally smells the way we understand that word, or got angry, or was satisfied, or decided. All of those are human concepts, which when we put them on God, it's a good idea to say in Hebrew, kivyachol, or in my loose English rendering, so to speak, at least to keep that always in mind. It's as if God said, at the end of 10 generations, I have been very, very patient. Pirkei Avot describes the existence of those first 10 generations as a demonstration of God's patience. But he said enough. And he destroys, no, almost destroys the entire world. At the very end of last week's Torah reading, Bereshit, we find God's dissatisfaction with the way the world is turning out, the people on the world. But the last verse is, V'noach matza chen b'enei Hashem. Noach found favor in God's eyes. So at the beginning of this week's reading, God is able to say, all right, I'm not going to destroy the entire world lock, stock, and barrel. I will almost destroy the whole world and start all over, but Noach and his wife and his 3 sons and their wives and samples of all of the animals will be spared the destruction and devastation of the flood, so that once the flood is over, we try it again. And the way I see it and understand it, he went another 10 generations and was still not satisfied that human beings were living up to their minimum standards of decency. Came Avraham Avinu, and at this point, we sort of, I don't know if you want to call it like this, a new plan which has 2 prongs. One of them is initiated in Parshat Noach, and that is that human beings are not expected to rise to the high, spiritual, lofty heights that perhaps God had hoped them to rise to, giving them the choice of how to behave. But that would be the challenge of Avraham, Sarah, and their descendants, namely the people of Israel. And for the rest of the world, there will be the basic code of human behavior, which we, the Jewish people, summarize in the form of Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the 7 Noahide laws, which is better rendered the 7 Noahide categories of law, which include many more than 7 commandments. In fact, a study has been made, several studies have been made. One of them concludes that approximately 70 mitzvot out of the 613 are subsumed under the heading of the seven Noahide laws, many others are also considered obligatory on the Ben Noach, which means on the average human being, the man in the street. Every human being is expected not only to live up to the commands of the seven mitzvot of Bnei Noach, and as I said, translating that into 70 out of our 613, but a couple of dozen more, and there's a catch-all mitzvah among the seven categories called dinim, which means that societies, non-Jewish societies in the world, are expected to pass laws that contribute to an ethical and moral society. And that's a plenty enough challenge for human beings. God turned to the Jewish people at Sinai and before, but certainly from Sinai onward, and said, look, you guys, you people, are going not only to toe the mark to the standard course of conduct of decent human beings, but you have the additional challenge, the additional group of up till 613 mitzvot and many, many halachot that make up the Jewish way of life, to go above and beyond what I expect from regular human beings. And here's the irony. Human beings don't live up to what God expects of us. Jews don't live up to what God expects of us, but God expects the Jewish humans, or the human Jews, the Jewish humans, I don't know which one you want to say, it doesn't matter, I hope you're getting my point. And part of that point is important to repeat very clearly without trying to be cute with language. A Jew is first and foremost a human being. He does not give up his membership in the human race by virtue of his Judaism. And a lot of Jews don't behave as if that is really so. A Jew must be a mensch. All people must be menschen. All people must be decent human beings. The Jew must be a decent human being and much, much more than that, because there is a tremendous spiritual potential that Jews are commanded, obligated, chosen to rise to. The Jew is further commanded to show the rest of the world to be a light unto the nations, to show the rest of the world how to be not Jewish, but how to be a good, decent human being. Now, over the centuries, there have been non-Jews that have turned towards the Jewish people and said, I want to become a Jew. And we have conversion to Judaism, and a convert to Judaism is held in very high regard. A sincere, true convert is respected. We have a command to love him, in addition to the command that we have to love every fellow Jew. So we recognize the greatness of any person who realizes and recognizes the, let's call it the spiritual challenge of Judaism, and is willing to commit himself to undertake it. I'm not going to get involved now into the difficulties of people with wrong motives or tainted motives to convert. We're talking about the best case scenario, which is a convert to Judaism who we will teach and then welcome with open arms and consider him with the term Ger Tzedek, a righteous and a true convert to Judaism, no doubt about it. But the Jewish people do not go out and proselytize, do not go out and solicit converts. In fact, we are sort of duty-bound to be extremely reluctant and reticent to accept converts. We try to discourage them, certainly on their first approach, and only after a persistence which convinces us of the sincerity of the potential convert will we then expend the energy and time and everything to bring that person into the protective wings of God, so to speak, and accept that convert. But there definitely is another way to go. It is not just converts to Judaism that we should be interested in. In fact, first, discouraging a non-Jew who wants to convert from conversion, but we actually don't have to do that in a negative way. We can do it in the positive way of offering them a very acceptable alternative to conversion, maybe even a preferable alternative, and that is to become true B'nai Noach. Now, a Ben Noach does not kill, does not steal, does not worship idols, does not commit indecent acts of a sexual nature, and many, many other things that are expected of the B'nai Noach. But there's another aspect of the righteous Ben Noach which goes an important step beyond. And that is, we're not talking about coincidental compliance with the rules for non-Jews, the Jewish perspective on the rules for non-Jews. We are talking in compliance with these rules, L'shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael, in the name of and for the sake of the God of Israel, the one God. That is a big step. There could be non-Jews who, if we were to examine their behavior and lifestyle, we would say, here, without too much adjustment, you're already there. But it needs, from our perspective, to go that other step, that very big step of doing it for the sake of God, and for the sake of God, including recognition that He is the God of Israel. In other words, recognition of the status of the Jew in the broad picture. Could still be a very good person, could still be a very ethical person, but the righteous Ben Noach, which we would like to encourage people to be, includes that additional aspect. As usual, there's loads more to say, but I really, really want to play a track from a Lenny Solomon Schlockrock album, the one Almost on Broadway, where they took a Broadway song from Beauty and the Beast and basically told the story, which is at the end of this week's portion of Noach, the story of the Tower of Babel.
Shinar, look around, lots of different people walking up to say,
build more, build more,
build more,
build more,
build more.
There was one nation and one spoken language. After the flood, life should be swell. But instead the people came, had to fight with God again. They decide to build a tower in Babel.
Yes, Nimrod, sir?
We have a job to do. We can't stop. I'm going for the ultimate glory. I'm talking a war with God. And we'll fight. You'll see. The bricks, hurry up!
What have we here? I see one single nation. Unfazed, attracted, they all gel. Want to fight with God somehow? This he will not allow. They'll be trying to destroy God in Babel.
Build more
today.
1,000 stories.
Build more
today.
This is our life.
I need more bricks.
Don't make it fancy.
We must wage war on God in this life. A report from Babel.
It's forming. I will be ruler of the world tomorrow.
We're holding steady.
Now don't let me down. Have you got enough glue?
Look at this tower today!
Out of sight! And tomorrow, almost done.
Almost done? Then we will really fight!
Well, then let's savor it. Keep the pieces. Building at night cannot fail. We will be very wise. Put the finishing touch and it's war!
Yes, sir! We will not desist!
Well, thank you. And get me some more mud!
Now we all know what God would have to do here. They were not sad when people fell, but they cried till they were sick if they dropped just one small brick. 'Cause only one thing mattered in Babel.
Oh, and they weren't lazy. They worked so hard all night for free. That's what was so alarming. Here we have a lesson in the power of unity. God came down yonder and he ended their duty and mixed their language up as well.
They could talk and they could prod, but you know you can't fight God, so everyone dispersed at once.
Yes, everyone dispersed at once. Yes, everyone dispersed at once.
Well, you gave it your best shot, Nimrod. You were the greatest warrior in the whole world.
I know.
No being alive could come close to beating you. But God, that's another matter.
I know, it's true. It seems in hindsight, we should have followed that Abraham.
You mean follow his orders?
He's the chosen one. The one who came out of the fire.
But he's...
the one who God loved the most.
I know, but...
now we are just one of the rest. And do we want to be one of the rest?
No, of course. I mean, the Jews, but...
right from that moment, there has been Messorah. The first exile was there as well. Out of this locality came the Talmud called Bavli. The oral Torah came right from Babel.
I'm sure you know when we are worthy. Mashiach comes, we'll hear the root. We will not part from speaking Hebrew. Every other language will be in the shoot.
Bracha!
Parsha!
Lida!
Baby! When are they praying?
Shubchei!
Shandy!
Kenya!
Ophir!
Licha!
Eponero!
Pray for me!
Well, we must get God back into our life.
It's time to get along, please, no more strife.
We're living in a world of change and ritual. First come the pains when we all yell.
With God's pity, no more sin. Mashiach's coming in. But get along inside this world.
Our duty is to get along. Learn our lessons straight from old. Bye-bye.
That was Lenny Solomon of Schlock Rock fame with a song about Babel, Tower of Babel. We're coming to the end of another Torah Tidbits audio. The part that you're listening to now is just on OU Radio. So we're beyond the 46-minute mark, which is the very strict time frame that we have on Israel National Radio. Since OU Radio is a little more flexible, I'm able to finish up some things that I didn't get a chance to say during the bulk of the show. In fact, the song you just listened to was cut for the Arut Sheva version, and if you're listening on OU Radio, you got the full version. I want to finish with an observation. And it really goes back to what was supposed to be the theme of the show, which is water. I find it very noteworthy that we read Parshat Noach specifically right around the time that we, at least in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, begin to ask for rainfall. Because if you look at the content of the Parsha, you wouldn't really want to ask for rainfall, certainly not the rainfall that destroyed the world. The Mishnah in Ta'anit speaks of dates in Cheshvan, where if it has not rained until that time, then fasting begins to supplement the prayers for rain. So what you have then is the realization that no rain slash drought is, of course, bad. Too much rain, hurricane force rain, flooding is not good. And there's a happy medium between destructive rain and the destructive power of lack of rain. And that is called Gishmei Bracha, blessed rain. When we ask for rain in our daily Amidah, we ask God to give v'tein tal umatar livracha. Tal umatar is dew and rain, but immediately we qualify that by saying the kind of rain that we want and need, livracha. Sfaradim have a very lovely custom that during the repetition of the Amidah, when the Chazan describes God in the second bracha, which we all started to do with Shmini Atzeret, as the Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGashem, or Geshem, the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall, the congregation answers or reacts to those words, Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGashem, Livracha. Livracha is not there part of the text, but it is supplemented by the congregation. Among Ashkenazim, it's usually Baruch Hu V'ruch Shmo and Amen. That's our feedback to the Chazan and Amodim D'Rabbanan. Sfaradim are a little bit more vocal in the congregation's response to things that the Chazan says. And this one, Mashiv HaRuach Merid HaGeshem, Livracha, is a very significant and important and beautiful thing to say. It sort of echoes the story accounted in the Mishnah, the same Mishnah we've been talking about a couple of times, Mishnah Mesechet Ta'anit, which tells a story, which I used to think was a story, never knew years ago that it was from a Mishnah. I think it gives it a lot more weight being from a Mishnah. It's the story of Choni HaMa'agel, Choni the circle drawer. There was a fellow named Choni who was known to have a specially close relationship with God. He was gifted with the power of prayer, and people were confident that his prayers were answered, even when other prayers were not necessarily answered. There was a situation of drought, and the people of Israel turned to Choni to ask him, as a ben bayit, so to speak, a member of God's household, to pray on their behalf that it should rain. So he said okay, and he prayed that it should rain, and it did not. So he drew a circle on the ground and stepped into the circle and turned to God and said, God, your children have turned to me, who has the reputation of being close with you, and asked me to pray on their behalf. I will not leave this circle until it starts to rain. It is said subsequently that had it not been Choni, the judges in the town would have excommunicated such a person who talks to God like that. But apparently Choni had this very special relationship. So the Mishnah continues. He drew the circle, asked for rain, said he wasn't leaving without rain, and a few drops came, as if God were playing with him to say, there, you got your rain, now get out of the circle and go home, because whatever. Choni said, no, that's not what I want. I want a lot of rain. It came down in such torrents that it threatened to destroy more than benefit. Choni said, that's not what I mean either. I want blessed rain that fills the cisterns and the underground water table, etc., etc. And it started to rain, a beautiful, blessed rain. He left the circle and went home, and everybody was happy for a while. because it kept raining and 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 more rain and more rain and more rain until the people were so afraid of the rain now that they came back to Choni and said, can you pray that it should stop just like you prayed that it should start? He said, nope, that's where I draw the line. I won't pray that it should stop raining. Bottom line, Israel is such a country which depends on good rain during its rainy season, and it does not rain, not in its rainy season. I'll never forget one year when my mother came to visit us in July, and she walked into the house wearing a raincoat, and my young daughters at the time asked her why she was wearing a raincoat in the middle of the summer. She said it was pouring when I left New York. They started to laugh. They didn't even realize that Grandma had such a kidding, teasing sense of humor. And she took a while till she convinced them that, no, it really was raining. It just was so out of their experience that it struck them as funny for anyone to even suggest it. But Israel does have a rainy season and needs rain during the rainy season. And we have had good years and bad years, and there's the level of the Kinneret, which is a major supplier of water to the country, and there is the quality and the quantity of the underground water sources and reservoirs here and there and all kind of wadis that fill nicely in a good rainy winter, and we need rain. And from Tfilat Geshem on Shmini Atzeret, which to us was also Simchat Torah, we started referring to God as the rainmaker, and now we are approaching 2 weeks after the holiday. This Motzoi Shabbat is coming Saturday night of Parshat Noach, when we will ask God for rain. And again I say, it is so ironic that we ask God for blessed rain on the week which we read in the Torah about more rain than anyone could possibly use, and that's exactly the point. So you have rolled into one smack in the middle, or towards the beginning at least, of the month of Cheshvan. You have some contexts in which we're talking about no rain, and others in which we are talking about harmful, destructive, more than you could use rain. And the bottom line is our sincere petition to God that He bless us with beneficial rain in sufficient quantity and quality to do all of the good things that rain is supposed to do. One thing you will not hear kids singing in Israel is rain, rain, go away, come again another day. It's just not part of the culture here. The culture is very aware of the needs of rain and of rain. And you would be impressed when you saw little kids dancing for joy when it rains the first time after a period where it hasn't rained much. We so far have had our little taste of rain. They are predicting heavy rains for late Friday and over Shabbat, and we will see what we will see. So remember, if you live in Israel, that this Motzoi Shabbat we start asking for rainfall. Those who visit Israel in Chutz Laretz, the custom is to begin the petition only from the 5th or 6th of December. Whole story, which I'm not going to get into now, as to why it's a different date and why it's a secular date and why it's not an accurate secular date. Those are all interesting side points, but the bottom line is that we can use the rain, we need the rain, and we will ask God for it and hope that He will answer us favorably. Visitors to Israel, be it a short visit or a long-term study visit, should ask their poskim, their rabbis, for a definitive halachic ruling as to how to go about when to say and where in the davening to say V'tein Talum Matar Livracha from this Motzoi Shabbat until the beginning of December. In any event, on that note, let me wish you all a Shabbat Shalom and Lehishtameah. And I think I will finish off with another track from that Lenny Solomon tape, the one almost on Broadway. You will recognize the music immediately, and the words are extremely clever. And this song is in honor of the Shabbat. Enjoy it. The song and the Shabbat.
Ah, soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Every Shabbat meal we eat is really quite nutritious. Can I have some chicken served on Ima's special dishes? Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. When I was a little boy, I felt really glad. I'd look forward to Shabbat meals, cause everyone I had would be a great experience and put me in the know. Listen to the singing and you think you're at a show. Hey! Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Every Shabbat meal we eat is really quite nutritious. Can I have some chicken served on Ima's special dishes? Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Guests would come and go, each Shabbat meal was heaven sent. I'd hear words of Torah and it really made a dent. So now that I am older, I can do the same, you see. With my wife and children, there's no place I'd rather be. Hey! Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Every Shabbat meal we eat is really quite nutritious. Can I have some chicken served on Ima's special dishes? Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. You know, we're not singing it in the right order, which is candlesticks, kiddush, challah, and soup. But then the song wouldn't work now, would it?
I'm afraid not.
So look forward to the Sabbath each and every day, cause observing it real well can help Mashiach come our way. Take a day for resting and it will improve your life.
For example,
yes,
Shabbat really changed my world. For my kids and my wife, it's great for me and you.
Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Soup and challah, candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious.